You're listening to Central Time. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Ferret. Now, as political debates over how to address PFAS in Wisconsin continue, we're taking a look at the health effects of these so-called forever chemicals, which can be present in drinking water, nonstick cookware, clothing, and more. Exposure to PFAS has known effects on many parts of the body, including the thyroid, the kidneys, and liver. Exposure to PFAS during infancy and childhood is associated with reduced immune function. Scientists are still trying to understand what other effects forever chemicals may have on human health, including how it may affect pregnancy and the risk of developing breast cancer. We're talking about the risks PFAS pose to human health, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about PFAS and human health? Are PFAS present in your drinking water where you live? What action do you want to see on this issue? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sue Fenton is the director of the North Carolina State University Center for Human Health and the Environment and the Research Translation Coordinator for the Superfund Research Program on PFAS in North Carolina. She specializes in reproductive endocrinology and received her BA, MS, and PhD from UW-Madison. Sue, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Shereen. It's great to be here.
What ways are scientists sure right now that PFAS affect human health? What do we know?
Well, we do know that most people have it in their blood, and that there are very few who don't, mm-hmm. unfortunately. We also know that there are many associations in human health to exposures that that people have had. And now we know that some of those exposures can be recapitulated in animal models or cell models, where we've actually on purpose exposed those animal models or cell models to the PFAS of interest. And we have seen similar health outcomes as those that have been reported in human populations.
So are we talking about things like thyroid disease, cancers?
Yeah. Yes. So fatty liver is one thing that we have seen, and like metabolic disease. So obesity, increased liver disease in animal models and humans have been reported. Thyroid effects are shown in most animal models now that have been tested with PFAS. And also some endocrine issues like mammary gland development, lactation, inability to lactate, I should say, has been shown in both people and rodent models, as well as small birth weight in the offspring or the infant.
So tell us a little bit more about the way that developing fetuses and infants can be affected by PFAS.
Sure. So we know that in animals, the more the exposure increases, the worse the effect is. And there are associations in humans like that also. So there are enough studies now that mathematical modelers have shown that for a certain percent increase in PFAS, you can expect a certain decrease in infant size. We don't know exactly how that happens yet. We think there is involvement of the placenta during development. So maybe the PFAS targets the placenta, but we really aren't sure exactly of the mechanism yet. A lot of people are working on that.
One thing that caught my eye was seeing that PFAS could result in reduced response to vaccines in children. That took me by surprise. Why?
PFAS cause immune suppression. And this is an interesting story because the antibodies that an infant is born with comes from the mom. So she transferred those antibodies to the baby through the placenta and through breast milk. And it's possible that it all starts in the womb. So it may be affecting the mom's immune system also, in addition to the infant or the child. so they have less ability to raise a response to a vaccine. So you need these antibodies in your body to be able to respond to the vaccination, so that you won't be affected by it. And this immune response is definitely affected by PFAS, both in animal models and in humans.
When we're talking about adults, why do PFAS affect our immune function? How does that work?
Well, there's about three different ways that it can do that. I don't know that the full story is out yet. I don't know that. So B cells and the immune response is actually affected, and there may be some effect at other various levels in the immune response. So I just know that there are three different ways, three different methods. Mechanisms, I guess,
Sure.
that PFAS have affected the immune system. So it's not just a single thing that it affects. There's like multiple levels where you can have a negative impact by PFAS. So, I mean, that's important. And PFAS can affect multiple organs too. So it may affect a binding protein and the way the cells mature or something like that. So there are definitely multiple ways that you can do that.
Sue Fenton is the director of the NC State University Center for Human Health and the Environment and an expert on PFAS. Are you concerned about the health risks from your own exposure? Have you changed your water consumption habits as a result? Call us 800-642-1234. Sue, how quickly is the science emerging here? I feel like we didn't know half of this stuff 5 years ago. Or is that
You
just my
are
perception?
exactly right. Yes, you are exactly right. Things are moving incredibly quickly. So in the last few years, I've been involved in writing really big reviews on the health effects of PFAS. So I've published one of them with several other experts in the field in a journal. And then I was just recently involved in the PFAS report to Congress that kind of characterized the effects, all of the known health effects of PFAS and the knowledge gaps. So now we're getting a little more specific about the knowledge gaps. You know, before it was like we didn't even know all the target tissues, but now we know the target tissues, and we want to know how exactly the PFAS are affecting these tissues so that maybe we could have intervention. So the number of papers published on PFAS in the last 5 years has been exponential.
Why do you
COVID
think
had
that
something to
is?
do with
I mean,
that.
why is that? Why is there kind of this new sense of urgency that didn't seem to really exist a few years ago?
I think because the people in the White House are really paying attention to it. I mean, there's a real urgent need to protect people in affected communities, and our elected officials are now calling for that. So there's money available for research that we did not have before, and there's a real concentrated effort to protect not only affected communities, but also military and civilian workers who work, you know, with that put out fires at military bases and at airports with aqueous film forming foams that may contain PFAS. So they have a quite an exposure also.
What do we know about the relationship between PFAS exposure and COVID infection risk? Is there a correlation there, or don't we know yet?
There are numerous studies ongoing right now. There are some initial papers that do show an association between elevated PFAS exposure and more severe COVID outcomes or side effects, I guess. But there are numerous studies ongoing now. I think we'll know more in about a year. It takes a little while to gather all that information and then, you know, analyze it and process it. But there are numerous people that I know who are working on that out on those outcomes.
We have Janet on the phone from La Crosse. Janet, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Thank you.
So what would you like to know?
I just moved to the La Crosse area last February, and I was very careful of selecting my home, but I wanted to live on French Island, which is where the airport is, and there's a big issue with PFAS. So but when I moved in February, I signed up to get Culligan water, and I used that exclusively, not only for me, but for my dog as well, because we're only two people in the household. Mm-hmm. And listening to your show, I was hearing some of the concerns that interest me would be like the immune system. I'm 68, so I'm not an infant, but I'm on the other end of the distribution curve, mm-hmm. where I can become more vulnerable to a lot of things. So the immune system, and then my dog is on thyroid pills. She came here with those, so this is not new. But, you know, the types of things that PFAS can impact, I'm finding very interesting to hear on your show, because they're part of my life and part of the choice of where I chose to move to, knowing this, but thankful that the city is offering Culligan water. And I hope it doesn't come from the same source.
Thank you, Janet. You know, that actually brings up a question. So I'm really wondering about the risk to household pets. Should we be worried about that?
Sure. You know, if they're drinking the water, they have a little smaller blood volume, so their internal levels might actually get to higher levels than the adults living in the house. Because it can definitely bioaccumulate. Some PFAS can definitely bioaccumulate in our pets also. There's very little investigation in that area. I know there are a lot of people interested in it, but there's not very much funding for those types of studies. So unfortunately, we don't know a lot. But for all intents and purposes, yes, it could definitely accumulate in your dogs. But if you're wondering about your water, if your water says that it's purified by being either distilled or reverse osmosis distilled, there's a very good chance that it has very little PFAS in it. So you want to look for water, bottled water at least, that says it's purified by distillation. That will definitely help.
Okay, good to know. We're talking about how PFAS affect human health with Sue Fenton. She is director of the NC State University Center for Human Health and the Environment and an expert on how PFAS affect pregnant people and developing fetuses. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced negative health outcomes related to PFAS? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Ferret. We're talking about how PFAS affect human health with Sue Fenton, director of the NC State University Center for Human Health and the Environment. We want to hear what you think, too, at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the health effects of PFAS? Call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. So we're going to go to the phone. We have Connie with us now from Pewaukee. Hi, Connie. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I was wondering about absorption through the skin. The city is saying that it's safe to shower in the water. Unfortunately, my location, my home, I can't get like a whole house purification system. And I've seen studies that go both ways about it being able to be absorbed. So I'm interested in your input on that.
Great question, Connie. What do you think?
Yeah, so all of the PFAS that have been tested thus far have been shown to be able to be absorbed through the skin. However, the amount that you absorb is probably not going to be more than if you drank a glass of water. You're going to absorb it more efficiently if you're eating or drinking it or even inhaling it. So yes, it can be absorbed, but that is going to be a little less than other routes of exposure for you. Also, if your levels are really high, if you would have some irritation of your skin, from at least from what's been published, that if there was a high enough exposure to PFAS.
Okay, thanks for answering that question. Sandy from Columbus called but couldn't stay with us. And Sandy's question, if PFAS in individual blood systems can contribute to a person's health outcomes with a COVID infection, couldn't PFAS also contribute to negative health outcomes after a spike protein vaccine?
Well, actually, some of the best data on, for us to understand that PFAS cause immune suppression is in children after they got like tetanus or measles vaccines. They've actually measured them not being able to respond as well. They didn't have as much of a titer to the vaccination after their vaccinations. So that's really where we understood that PFAS cause immune suppression and can affect your ability to mount a response to a vaccine. So there's a chance that there's that all vaccines could be less effective in people that have high PFAS exposures, but we don't have that answer yet. So I don't know the exact answer to her question, but we do know that it's more, there are multiple vaccines that this has happened with that they're less responsive. People are less responsive.
Yeah, Sandy, that was a great question.
Yeah.
Let's go to Stella from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question. We have a four-filter reverse osmosis system, two pre and one post, and the reverse osmosis filter. We've used that for years, and we, our pets, our chickens, and the wild birds all get reverse. Any living creature gets the RO water. My question is, does the reverse osmosis system remove the PFAS?
Hmm. Do you know, Sue?
Yes, that is the only system that I know of so far that removes most all PFAS. So some of the granulated activated charcoal filters only remove some PFAS, but the reverse osmosis method removes nearly all of them.
That's great to know. Yeah, that's great to know. And a lot of people are curious about those water purification systems. So that I'm so glad that Stella asked that question. We have Lee now with us calling from the town of Campbell. Hi, Lee. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So just to tag on a little bit to the discussion about the filtration systems, because it's really important for people that live in communities that have known PFAS. Number one is most communities don't have a filter collection program. So if you know you have PFAS in your water and it's being absorbed and you're throwing that spent highly concentrated contaminated filter in your trash, you have to worry about the waste stream. But the other part of it is that, it was mentioned earlier about medical knowledge regarding PFAS. And it's very upsetting to me that both 3M and DuPont knew as early as the 1950s how toxic these chemicals were, because they saw the results of that PFAS exposure in their employees. And now here we are 50 years later, plus 50 to 70 years later, still trying to catch up with the research. So I'm grateful that the government is investing in it. Those of us who live in PFAS contaminated communities definitely will benefit from that research. But, once you've been drinking it your whole life and you're living with the health effects, it's hard to go back.
Thanks a lot, Lee. I appreciate the call. Sue, what do you think about what Lee just said?
Yeah, she hit the nail on the head. It's not something you can get out of your body very easily. And unfortunately, the best way to lower your levels is for women to have a child and to breastfeed, both of which, are wonderful things in your life, but unfortunately it transfers it to the infant. And really there's no other way. So, she's totally right.
I'm curious, how long and at what levels does someone have to be exposed to have these health risks? Does it vary from person to person? Is it do you have to be, mm-hmm. you know, consume a lot of it or touch a lot of it?
Right. And it, yes. And it depends on what you're exposed to. So if it's PFOA, PFOA or PFOS mm-hmm. or PFHXS or something larger than that, like PFNA, some of those accumulate quite dramatically in your body. There are some smaller chain things that were produced by 3M that may not accumulate as much. So you could be exposed to them for a very long time and still have fairly low levels in your body. So it depends on how much you've been exposed to, how long, and what you've been exposed to, and how many different PFAS you've been exposed to. So unfortunately, there's no straight answer to that, but they accumulate.
Just in our last minute together, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is proposing new regulations for PFAS, all 20 parts per trillion for PFOA, PFOS, 450 parts per billion for PFBS. What do you think of those limits? Do they line up with what the science shows is safe?
Well, they're a little higher than what the federal government is actually. So the U.S. EPA, Office of Water, is proposing levels that are lower than that for all of the ones that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have used all of the most current science to develop the maximum contaminant limits that led to their decisions on how much to regulate these mm-hmm. chemicals at. So Wisconsin's current thought, I do think they have a very strong case for the levels that they've developed.
Sue, we're fading in and out here. I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a great discussion. Sue Fenton, the director of NC State University Center for Human Health and the Environment, on today's Central Time.